Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. It is Friday, February the 5th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the year 2010. Today's topic, friendly class and home settings to support children with ADHD. With us in our studio today is Dr. Sydney Zintal. Before we get into things, I just want to make a few announcements. Next Friday, we've had a fair number of shows related to children and ADHD in the recent months. We're going to be making a little bit of a shift next week. We're going to have Dave DeVelder in talking about difficulties focusing on business strategy. Find many ADHDers sometimes struggle with the strategy and they deal with the tactics or vice versa. So we're going to talk about that, and it's going to be a fun show because he's going to talk about some things he does, and I'm actually going to talk about some strategy and tactics that I do. That you, for some of you listeners, you might find actually quite fun and kind of humorous. So know we've got that going on. And then the following week, February the 19th, we're going to have David Gwork in talking about ADD Coach Trained School. So we've got a bunch of good shows up, and we're going to have some more shows scheduled at the end of this month. So check our homepage at your leisure for upcoming episodes. But enough of that. Again, today our topic is friendly class and home settings to support children with ADHD. And with us today is Dr. Sydney Zintal. She's a professor of special education at Purdue University and is an internationally known researcher in the education of children with ADHD and the preferences and responses of these students to specific learning conditions and environments. She's also the author of the book ADHD in Education. So welcome to the show, Sydney.
Thank you.
I've been very excited about having you on the show. For the listeners, I got the opportunity to listen to Sydney at the Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Disorder annual conference in Cleveland back, I believe it was in November. She was one of the keynote speakers, and found your talk fascinating. To kick things off today, I guess what I'd like to ask you to do is, can you explain, at least to the listeners, your basic theories on human behavior, and we'll go from there?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. The theory that I've been studying for about 40 years is called the optimal stimulation theory. And the theory applies not only to children, but also to adults and also to most organisms, which is that all of us need stimulation. And in the absence of that stimulation, the brain actually will atrophy. But we need different amounts of stimulation. Different people need different amounts. I applied this theory, which was originally presented for normal individuals and organisms in the 1950s by psychologists, to students with ADHD, because it looked to me as if they needed more stimulation than most people do. So I began to study it, began to do research in that area, and have expanded the theory quite a bit since that time. But just sort of in a nutshell, there are many ways that we attempt to create more stimulation for ourselves. The classic example for individuals with ADHD is by moving. Now, females talk more. Other people may move more, not only by moving and talking, but also by our emotionality, how emotional we are. Sometimes some of us are attracted to aggression as a way to get stimulation. Most of us who are ADHD have difficulty waiting. I call it hating to wait. It's called action impulsivity.
Hating to wait, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, hating to wait. And then there's the attentional component, which is the component, I think, Jeff, that you are most interested in, or that you've achieved notoriety on. And that's, in my perspective, a very wide focus of attention that sort of attempts to take in as much as can be taken in, mm-hmm. to create stimulation for the brain, actually. And, you know, the brain does need the stimulation in order to function properly. So we are attracted to salience, we're attracted to movement, we're attracted to bright colors, we're attracted to things that are on the outside. And those natural ways that we attempt to get stimulation need some compensation or balancing of that natural style, the ADHD attentional style. And that's been a lot of the subject of my research.
It's fascinating because you said two things that just strike me. One is our brain needs stimulation to work properly.
Bringing it to work. Say that again.
I think you said that for our brain to actually work properly, it needs stimulation.
Absolutely does.
And earlier you had said almost if it didn't have stimulation, does it actually atrophy?
Actually does. I've done some terrible experiments with kittens where they obscured the eyes of kittens.
Uh-huh.
And in the absence of getting any kind of stimulation to the eye, which is the closest, which the retina is the closest surface to the brain, the kittens will go blind.
Really?
Yeah, and they've done research in that area with early infant stimulation programs, seeing that very young infants need a tremendous amount of stimulation early, and now the research is on older people, showing that older people need to continually use their brains or they lose those functions. So it's a general phenomena across all organisms, across ages, but it's a particular need of people with ADHD.
You know, it's fun as a coach, attention coach that work. I work a lot with adults that have attention deficit disorder because when they're coming to coaching, what I pay attention to, I'm mostly focused not on what they can't do. I'm really focused on what they're interested in, and kind of let that. And when I say interest, it's not necessarily what they think they're interested in. It's kind of like their behavior, what they kind of naturally kind of gravitate to. And I just ask questions and kind of follow that to let it lead to us what works. And kind of what I'm hearing you saying is, you know, There's a little bit of a correlation here is that instinctively the brain needs that to kind of move, and I presume it would, you know, it's naturally going to reach out and crave that. Is that?
Yes, it is. It's naturally going to reach out. We're not exactly sure. We can't predict which way one person is going to go versus which way another person is going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people will like music. And, you know, I remember running into a man who said, after listening to my presentation, he said, you know, I never could understand until I heard your presentation why I had to play five different instruments. So music is one way. Some people like to talk a lot. They get into jobs that have a lot of talking that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different ways that people go about getting the stimulation that they need. And it sounds like what you're doing is trying to help them identify what those natural paths are.
It's funny, just to tip off next week, I'm having a guy talk in, and the radio show was originally started because I'm a very verbal person, and I learned that way. And it's funny because originally I started the show exclusively. It really wasn't a show. It was really just a tool for me to kind of go learn and to delve into subjects with some other people. And it was just a natural for me as opposed to doing it kind of the hard way. So I don't want to kind of spend a lot of time on me and this stuff because I think that some of our other discussions will bear some of the stuff out. But if that's your fundamental theory, talk about some of the key principles and stuff and things that you think about when you're in the research, specifically relates to the environment a person with ADD's in.
Okay. Well, there's ways that people with ADHD need to compensate, as I was saying. And one of them is because we're so attracted to the outside, we need some way to help individuals with ADHD focus on their own thoughts, their own strategies, their own plans, so that journaling, asking these people questions like you do, is a way to focus people on the inside of themselves. People with ADHD also need some kinds of behavioral rules. Now, one of them that most of us use is called a wait-a-day rule. And wait-a-day just means if you get an email, you know, such as the sitting up in front of me right now, and you say, oh, this email is making me a little upset, you say, do not do anything for a whole day. You can respond to it, but not until tomorrow. So there are some rules, manners that people can learn to offset the behavioral impulsivity, the wanting to quickly have a response ready. And then I teach people things like, well, people need toys. Because toys are good. Toys are great. They allow you to delay. You can probably concentrate better if you have a toy in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, as one sort of general principle that can be applied across ages, is the use of highlighting what is important.
Mm-hmm.
Such as, and I've done a lot of studies in this area where I've highlighted using color what I want the children to pay attention to. many of us as adults highlight the materials that we're reading or looking at using color as well. For example, reading a paper, we might use a color marker. Mm-hmm. So markers, just highlighting the, for example, the plus and minus signs on a mathematics sheet or the topic sentences in something that you have to read or any kind of method that directs your attention to what you might not ordinarily attend to will help.
Hmm. So if you've got something that you're trying to pay attention to, it's weird because what I'm hearing you say, the more stimulation you can bring to it,
yep,
like highlighting something because you actually have the visual stimulation, which I probably be really good for visual people, can actually help bring more interest to it because it's more stimulating.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost like stimulation is a Pied Piper, and people with ADHD will follow that Pied Piper wherever that stimulation Pied Piper goes. So all you do is to put stimulation where you want people to attend, and that should be quite useful, has been shown to be quite useful. As a matter of fact, in some of the studies, they've actually improved the performance of children with ADHD beyond that of their typical peers when we focus their attention on what we want them to pay attention to.
I'm really enjoying this conversation because it's dovetails a lot of coaching, but the emphasis of really just taking situations and almost taking the stimulation to an extreme because it really just attracts that person's attention and brings it to it as a means of actually helping a person, in other words, bringing a little bit more drama to life.
Yes, a little more drama. Exactly, and that's another way that one can add stimulation if you're an educator or a coach. Clearly, the emphasis that you placed on certain things, clearly the emotion is extremely attractive for these children. And in fact, there's a really interesting and almost a little bit scary study that I did one time when I showed that people who yell at children with ADHD actually increases their aggressive behavior. Because of the emotion and yelling at them is such a reinforcer that, the emotion is so reinforcing in and of itself that even when you're punishing them by yelling, it makes them worse. Maybe not just immediately, but over time, it increases the bad behavior. Because emotion is such a wonderful thing if you have ADHD.
It was fascinating. I was actually working with somebody earlier today, and the individual is very creative when the emotion's in play, and they struggle when they're kind of bored. It was funny because they were witnessing a time earlier in the week where they were actually in an argument with somebody, kind of fighting. It was funny because we came to the realization that just that argument brings emotion into the play and actually kind of helps them think clearer. It actually brings creativity to it because of the stimulation.
Yes, exactly. Arguing does involve emotion, and the degree to which that person can be stimulated, they can be so articulate and so focused if they have sufficient stimulation. You know, people talk about the disorganization and sort of all of that stuff and people with ADHD, but if you get them sufficiently stimulated, that is, angry,
yep.
Wow, that attention will just focus in there and be just like a laser.
I can't help but, with the political or what's going on, is when you're describing it, all I can think of is James Carville, who has ADD, the political pundit, and he's sprinkling on like Larry King and that stuff time. And I just had a flashback the other night when he was just sitting there kind of quietly, and all of a sudden something kind of there was a little bit of a debate going on, and he jumped in, and you could see he was he was stimulated, and off he went. It was very articulate in what he was doing. It was kind of fun in the context of what you're describing. It kind of makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Think internally. You said a couple minutes ago that ADDers, that, you know, they're so external in the stimulation, and we need to get them to think internally. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah. Children with ADHD are known for blaming others, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they blame others for things because that's all that they pay attention to, is what other people are doing. They don't pay attention to their own thoughts, to their own intentions, to their own strategies, to their own values. And so at some level, we need to force them to sort of look inside, not by blaming them, of course, because that just makes them defensive, but by getting them to tell us what are their strategies, what are their plans, what are their opinions. And there are certain techniques that help us with that internal focus of attention, and that is the use of journaling. Just writing things in journals helps. So attention can either be directed externally or internally, and most of us go back and forth pretty easily between those two focuses. But children with ADHD and probably adults are primarily looking outwards. So we have to help them look inwards.
It's interesting because a lot of times when I'm working with an adult, I'll ask them, you know, what is it you're paying attention to? And almost it's like, think about your thoughts.
Or kind
of think about what's going on to send them internally. And I work some with adolescents, but a lot of times I work with the parents, and I encourage them to pay attention to what their kids are paying attention to. And it's a coaching theory. It's actually mirrored to the kid, like, oh, I see that you're I see that you draw a real good picture sometimes when, you know, you're thinking about this or some other things that are kind of going on. You're not telling them. You're just kind of, like, reflecting to them what's going on, which is a tool in coaching. Mirroring stuff back is to get the other person actually to begin to think internally about kind of what's going on, and you're just really acting as a mirror to kind of help them kind of deflect their thoughts kind of internally to think about what's going on.
That's really wonderful because it also doesn't involve any judgment. It involves describing what the scene looks like. And most people will not get defensive if you describe their actions. They only get defensive if you describe what you think their intentions are.
One of this show is called Attention Talk Radio because I like to illustrate how what is obvious is a function of what you pay attention to. And when you tell people what to pay attention to, they resist it. But if you ask them what they pay attention to or what they should pay attention to, now they're at choice. And they don't necessarily resist it. Many times they'll actually start to explore other things when you pay attention to it differently, i.e. don't tell them what to pay attention to, but ask them what they should pay attention to. It kind of changes it.
Yes, I can understand that wonderfully. First of all, most people with ADHD have been told forever what to do. So by sort of asking them, you're giving them, in a sense, a choice. And choice is another wonderful remediation for people, or at least children with ADHD. It is choice provides them with a type of cognitive stimulation where they have to start using their brain to come up with something. And we found that giving them choice decreases their activity so that if they're getting enough stimulation by thinking and by cognitive stimulation, they don't need to get it by talking or getting into trouble or moving around in the classroom. So that's one way to redirect their stimulation seeking to something more positive. It's by giving them choice, which just sounds like what you're doing.
Well, it is, and the more choice they are, it's kind of like I used to be a consultant for a period of time, and I would always walk in and say, hey, do this, and they never did it. It was interesting because I got into coaching because I coached somebody and I didn't tell them what to do. I asked them what they should do, and they picked the thing that I didn't think would work, but because they made the choice, it worked. It was fascinating. I was a better consultant as a coach not telling them what to do than I was telling them what to do, and it was simply because it was their choice. And, they kind of knew what to do, not me, and it was just fun. It's like I was a little humbled by it. But
and it's also a way of empowering people. I mean, a lot – I try to teach this to my teachers who are so much into giving people advice. Mm-hmm. That they don't really empower parents, they don't really empower children, because they just want to be doing everything themselves. And so I try to teach them that you give people power by asking them what are some things that they might think of, and sort of going with what you observe as their strengths. But that's a hard lesson for my teachers to learn.
Yeah, well, it's human nature to tell as opposed to ask. So
yes.
Sydney, I'd like to I want to talk about some specific settings, but I tell you what, let's go to commercial break real quick, and we'll come back and kind of talk about some more specific environmental type things so that parents can kind of think about that. So before we go to break, can you let our listeners know how they can learn more about you or get in contact with you if they've got any questions?
Sure. My My email address, which is the easiest way and probably the fastest way to get a hold of me, is Zentall, which is spelled Zentall, at purdue.edu. Pretty simple. And if you go online and look up, I have a web page with a lot of my articles that can be downloaded through Purdue University. You might have to make a few clicks to find that web page. And also, purchasing my book, which is ADHD in Education, is an inexpensive book that is put out, can be found, I suppose, on Amazon.com and a lot of other Barnes & Noble or whatever different places.
So if they just go to Amazon.com and Google Zentall,
they should be able to find it.
Okay.
Yeah, the name is very unusual. They're not going to find too many, so that'll work.
All right. I tell you what, let's run the break real quick. We'll be right back, everyone.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. When you're stuck, what do you pay attention to? If you're paying attention to the same logic or level of thinking that created the problem, maybe you need to pay attention to something else. Dig Coaching excavates outcomes by paying attention to what you pay attention to. After all, if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're likely paying attention to the wrong solution. To learn more about finding your obvious solution, go to digcoaching.com and download the free audio file, Finding the Obvious Solutions When They Aren't So Obvious. Don't delay, do it today.
If you have a topic that you want covered or question answered, just email us at info@digcoaching.com.
Be part of the show. Dial 646-652-4409. And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. Your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, with Dr. Sydney Zentall, talking about friendly class and home settings to support children with ADHD. While we were on break, it was interesting, Dr. Zentall, I was reflecting back on the presentation I saw you give in Cleveland and some of the techniques that I use in coaching, and I just kind of got an aha. In coaching, a lot of times, particularly ADHDers will come in and they're paying attention to, many times as I describe, what everybody's telling them that they should do or who they should be. And many times I use a lot of fables and metaphors and analogies, and they're really tools to kind of help those with ADD pay attention to things differently. Because I'm not telling them what to pay attention to. We just use the metaphor or whatever as a way to look at stuff, and hopefully they see the relationship and kind of pull it back to themselves and make a choice to look at it differently. And what's interesting is, in your talk, you were talking about fables and metaphors and stuff, and I kind of get it now. You were talking about those are good for kids, but they're really good when you make them really gross and really sick. And it kind of makes some sense right now, because what you were saying, the top show is, the brain needs stimulation, and ADHDers love that stuff. So if you can just take, the average thing and then juice it up a little bit by making it disgusting, maybe the kid will pay attention to it more.
Yes, that's true. But there's two principles that uses. One is that children with ADHD prefer a global image, a simple overall, like a metaphor description of something, rather than having you describe all the details. They don't really like the details. So a metaphor has the properties of being a global structure for them to hold in mind. And then, yes, they do like the gory and the scary and the unusual and the Stephen Kings. I remember one time a girl I was talking with who was ADHD, and she told me she wanted to be a dermatologist because of all the gross stuff that grows on people's skin. And she just captured it right there.
All the gross stuff, I'm attracted to it.
Yes.
We've got about 5 minutes left. I know this has been a spectacular show, and a lot of listeners sometimes are just kind of looking for practical type stuff. Can you share about some specific settings it kind of jogged your memory. I know we had talked one time before the show had started about, you know, doctors' offices sometimes, because there are doctors that have ADD, and actually the movement of constantly moving from room to room and different people and those types of things, that stuff can actually be stimulating to them and where they thrive. Can you share that and any other type stories that kind of help the listeners kind of see how this practically could help them?
Yeah, I think it's important for parents to also help their children move in the direction of an appropriate vocation. And certainly an MD gets the opportunity to do a lot of moving and walking and talking and problem solving, which are all skills. Mm-hmm. There are other things that people with ADHD are specifically really have positive characteristics, like they love to be helpful. They're spontaneous. I mean, don't you know that how many comedians are ADHD?
Yep.
They're highly productive. They do better when they're their own bosses. So all of these kinds of variables should help in selecting careers, traveling salesmen, musicians, as I mentioned before.
Yep.
In fact, is we also even know that music can improve the performance of children. That's an external source of stimulation. And even watching television while you're doing homework can work as long as it's not a really complex written task, where there is talking, because sometimes a really interesting conversation will interfere with thought processes that are needed to write a composition, for example. So, you know, having stimulation present for these children, giving them jobs, giving them responsibilities, and looking for careers that might be in the future for them could be helpful.
I don't know if this is scientific, and I'm not trying to hearsay, but I had heard one time that there's a if you take a look at the medical field, not to pick on the medical field, but if of the people that have ADD, there's somebody represented it, it's probably skewed the number of people that have it in an emergency room setting because of the adrenaline and the emergency stuff nature just naturally attracts. So it's a more stimulating environment, which might attract and might be a good career for certain people. Not everybody with ADD is different, but if somebody responds to that stuff, that could be something to consider.
Yes, it would be that, and I'm sure, I mean, I just am quite sure that there are a lot of occupations that are high risk,
yep.
are going to be ones where we find a lot of individuals with ADHD. High risk and stimulating, sure, and those kinds of things we have to keep our eyes on for them.
We've got about 2 minutes left. Is there anything, Dr. Zinthal, that you'd like to share with the listeners before we part, that do you think that would be of interest or helpful to them?
Well, I guess one of the things I'd like to mention is what's called the PREMAC principle, which is really, if I just sort of condense that down into something really simple and maybe not even explain all the details, it's a way where we can control ourselves. And we can help children control themselves by saying, if you can get this done, you can then do this preferred activity. Now, I want you to know that when I did a little study on this or in the area of homework, I found that some children who were trying to write down five-minute jobs that they would work as reinforcers, they would pick cleaning their room as a reward for getting their homework done. So it doesn't have to be a really great reward like candy or, you know, something. It can be like walking the dog for 5 minutes or, you know, rearranging the refrigerator. I mean, there's a whole lot of preferred activities that we have. Some of them are somebody else might not consider preferred, but they're better than the task that's sitting right in front of our face right now. So making a list of activities and trying to grade them on terms of what is most preferred and what is least, and using the little bit more preferred one to reinforce the little bit less preferred one, can have wonderful effects as a coach and as a, you know, helping children and for those of us who are ADHD adults.
Wow, that's that really kind of makes a lot of sense. And Sydney, again, I'd like to thank you for being on the show. This has been spectacular. We're gonna have you on the show to talk about some of your research, because I know I can learn a lot from it. And I'm sure some of the listeners, some of this would make a lot of sense for them. So, again, I'd like to thank you on the show. And before we wrap things up, can you let everyone know how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, my email address is zental@purdue.edu, and Purdue is spelled P-U-R-D-U-E. And that's the easiest way to get in touch with me. Of course, you can find my email, my telephone number, probably through the university, but the email is the best.
Again, thank you very much, Dr. Zintal, and thanks, everyone. We'll catch you next week. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff.